This is Matches Below, and you're watching Citywide Blackout. Justice for all.
Hey everyone, how's it going? And welcome back to Citywide Bites. This is our live show that we do every Saturday, 10 a.m. EST, right here on this page. And as you can see from the shirt, I'm in a bit of a fantasy mood, you know? I love a good fantasy story. It's actually kind of what got me into reading in the first place. So today I'll be joined in just a little bit by author Joseph Magalino. He recently closed the book on his Everrath trilogy with his third book, The Battle for Erythal, which was released back in February. We'll be talking all about that. So, of course, jump into the conversation, put some comments there, put some questions. In the meantime, I am going to bring the man of the hour on this episode. And of course, if you aren't already doing so, follow us on, of course, on this channel. Follow our Facebook and Twitter, Citywide Max for Twitter, Citywide Blackout for Facebook. I think the camera's backwards. Oh no.
Yep. One second.
Technical stuff. We love that. All right. Awesome. There we go. Joseph Magalino, welcome to the show, man. It's great to have you here.
Hi, good to be here. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited.
All right, let's do this then. So as I mentioned earlier, you have recently penned the final chapter for your Everrath trilogy. This was back in February. You released the last book, The Battle for Erythal. And jump in if I'm getting the names wrong here. This from everything I'm reading, this is a really, really cool fantasy series. So I guess to kick things off, just how does the final book wrap things up without spoiling anything? Of course, you want people to read the books, but what do we have in the final novel?
So the final novel, as the title suggests, is there is a big battle between the good guys, if you will, and the main evil of this trilogy. I like to stress throughout the trilogy that this is more than just people talk about writing with character driven versus plot driven sometimes. I like to think of Everrath as a mixture of that. So it's not only the completion of, hey, they're fighting back against this great evil that they met in the first book, and they're, some of them may live, some of them may not. Again, no spoilers, but not everyone necessarily makes it through that battle. But the exciting thing either way is it's not just that. It's also about these characters that you've come to see that some of them, like Irontail, for instance, he's a centaur warrior. You meet him in book one. He's really just this lowly warrior trying to figure out his place. And then by book three, the growth he's gone through, I'm not going to say what that looks like because I want people to find out themselves, but the growth he's gone through is just amazing. Like, it's really, it's interesting as an author, and it's kind of weird to say it this, but like, I'm so proud of some of those characters, just seeing them from book one to book three, the growth that they've gone through and the changes they've undergone.
Oh, so. Yeah, man, definitely. Because like, your characters are like living things themselves. You know, especially if you're doing an entire series, you get to see them grow and change and develop. And sometimes you're kind of surprised by what happens.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, characters will surprise you.
You know what? I want to talk about, of course, as you mentioned, not everyone makes it. You know, it's a fantasy series, a lot of action. Someone's gonna buy it eventually. When it comes though to killing off characters, do you struggle with that, or do you always have a clear mind as to like who's gonna make it and who's not?
So yes and no. There's always a clear, some characters I know have to go, you know, like there's some characters that I have very clear. I won't talk about it too much, but I'm writing my next series now. Right. And the next series takes place 60 years after this first trilogy. So it has some of the same characters because this creatures on Everrath, a lot of them, you know, elves live 1,000 years, even the centaur live hundreds of years. So it's a lot of the same characters, but I'll just say that there was one character I just killed off in the book I'm writing, and it was super painful. But I knew this is coming for over a decade now. You know, when I first decided I was going to write these stories in this world that I built, I'm like, okay, this character is going to die at this point. But it was so hard. It was so hard to see it through. It was part of me was like, can I find it out? Is there a way you can make it? But you can't. You gotta go with the story.
Sure, sure. And I imagine, too, with it being a fantasy series, there's always that, like, magic MacGuffin that you can just write in to, you know, boom, back they come. Oh, hey, they're, you know, not dead. Fantastic. But no, I think if you kill someone, you gotta leave them dead, unless their return advances the story somehow. You can't be sensitive about it.
Right, exactly. Well, so it's like the, you know, it's like Tolkien with Gandalf, right?
Yeah.
Like, that made sense, frankly, yeah. Because the lore of that, of who Gandalf was, what he was. But, like, yeah, generally speaking, yeah, and I, trying to think, I don't think there's ever an instance that I have planned right now. That doesn't mean that won't change in the future. But right now, I don't think I ever plan on doing something like that, because none of my characters, it wouldn't make sense, because they're all just mortal beings who will die, and they'll die.
Of course, so, now you've said that, and you got to stick to it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the deal. Well, what could happen is in 10 years, I might be like, oh, I have a new story idea, but right. Now I need resurrection. So
and I'll be there to say, wait a minute, you said you wouldn't do that.
So we'll see. But at present, I don't plan on it.
All right. So give us a quick rundown as to the overall story arc for this trilogy.
Yeah, so a big part of it is, like I said, it's kind of equal parts character and plot driven. And so part of that is these characters are all undergoing some sort of internal challenges. Right, so I'll use a couple of the main characters from the first book. Artemis and Savannah are a couple elves. Artemis is the head investigator for the Kingdom of Arathal, and Savannah is essentially a CSI person. She's a druid, but her role in the kingdom is to use her magic to help catch criminals. But as they go through that, we find out early on in that book, first of all, Savannah may be involved with some people who are trying to make some changes in that kingdom. And Artemis, you know, he doesn't have much beyond his job. So he's kind of focused on that. But when he gets kind of woken up to the injustice happening around him, he starts to struggle with that. So we're having them deal with these issues. All the while, there's this big bad guy that comes out, this super powerful evil that's never been seen before on Everath, essentially, and he's causing trouble. So they have to kind of put aside whatever personal struggles, and I know I mentioned Iron Tail earlier with his, basically the Centaur tribal system, their elders are flawless in the eyes of their people, right? That's their doctrine. That's their dogma of their people. And he's like, well, is that true? Like, I've literally seen them. They just made a mistake. And, but I'm told that they can't make mistakes. So again, we see all that growth. And then the other side of it is just them. It's that willingness. So one of the ideas I want to get across to people is like a hero isn't just like a job. It's not like a title you get. It's just normal people struggling with normal problems who have to kind of suck it up at times to use which I almost don't like saying it that way, but hopefully that doesn't come across. But who just, you know, who are like, look, I have issues, but so does everyone else. Let's work together. Let's solve. And there's this big bad Yezrekstahl who's basically threatening to destroy everyone and rewrite the world in his distorted image. So let's put that aside. Our troubles aren't that big a deal when we have a literal tyrant trying to murder everyone.
Perspective. It's all about perspective. It's like, you know what?
Exactly.
You know, my life's not really great, but also there's this power-hungry psychopath trying to destroy the world. So, you know, could be worse. Could be worse.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about your characters, because I read that you like to create these like flawed characters. What's the point behind that, and how do you think it kind of shapes the story?
Yeah. So, the reason I like doing that is actually pretty simple. It's just because I like them to be like us. And you know, a lot of times in fantasy, especially, it's like, oh, these are so perfect. Like I could idolize this person. No, I want people to be like, oh man, I've done stupid crap like that before. I could be this guy. And that's one of the things a lot of times it's like, oh, the heroes, everything they do is good. And you know, they're self-righteous. And oh, some of these heroes are like, I don't know. I think this is right. Some of them are even sure they're right, and they're doing the wrong thing. And another guy's going to call them out and be like, no, what are you doing? That's not the right way to do this. I think that adds such a depth. And frankly, I think it's so important today because I don't know what happened to the ability to look at people and separate them from issues. But it seems like today everyone's just like, oh, well, this guy is aligned with my team on this. So therefore, anything that person says, I'm going to back that person. And it's like, no, we should actually just take individuals as individuals, and we should take each piece by piece what they say. So you may hate one thing I say or one thing one character says, but on the flip side, they may do exactly the right thing when it counts. And I think that's what matters. Like, we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we do a lot of the times today is we're like, oh, this person has some flaws, so I'm not going to interact with them or listen to them at all. And it's like, no, I want to listen. I want to learn why are they flawed? Why are they like that? Like, tell me about you. So I just find the whole thing fascinating. I think a lot of the problems today exist because of this whole, like, people need to be perfect. No, we're people. We're all going to screw up all the time. So let's just accept that.
I like that. Picture this. You finished your first book and nailed it. The plot, the characters, all the twists and turns. This one's a winner, and all you need is the right cover. If you've got my art skills, this is the part where panic usually sets in. Enter the cover villain. Hero to writers everywhere. Founded by noted author Remy Flagg, Cover Villain focuses on composite image covers for science fiction and fantasy writers. Give them the details, and they'll craft a cover using popular trends that everyone will want to see. But wait, you say, I've got ideas of my own. No problem, as Cover Villain loves a good collaboration. As they say, our goal is to put a little villain in every cover we make. Want to know more? Then head to covervillain.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram. So along with the characters, of course, you have this very, very deep world. And one of the things I love about talking to fantasy or sci-fi writers is they will just spend like months, if not years, world building this thing before they start writing. And of course, if you check out his website, folks, you'll see he has separate pages for the different races, the different creatures, the different characters. And I love all that stuff. But what went into actually just putting all this together?
Yeah, so that it was a multi-year journey, and when it started, it wasn't. I wouldn't say I even had the intent of building a coherent world at first. It was just I was such a. So when I was young, I loved Final Fantasy. I played Elder Scrolls. You know, you get into all these different video games. Then in middle school, when I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy and Harry Potter and stuff. Like, I all of a sudden, my love for fantasy that kind of was always there turned into a love for reading, too, and a love for writing. And so in middle school and into high school, I think is when I stopped, like, freshman year, I did a bunch of online role-playing. So I was on online forums, and that's actually where I started writing, technically, writing back and forth. But then towards the tail end of that, so towards, like, eighth grade and then into ninth grade is when I actually start. I'm like, I'm going to just kind of write my own stuff, like my own lore. I'm going to start building my own stuff. And as it developed, it just came further and further along to where it was like, okay, first I'm just like, oh, which creatures live in my world? Then it was like, okay, well, what does that world look like? Like, is it seven continents like we have, or is it actually just five, which is where it ended up? Is it, and just thinking through all the little bits and pieces, how long does it take? How long is a year in Everath? How are their seasons measured? And you, I don't know if you saw on there that there's a calendar as well. Like, our calendar doesn't make sense in another world because none of the months would make sense because those people, you know, all the names. So like, it's a completely different character with different months. And so there's a lot that goes into play. Then you're thinking of religion, and then how could their religion develop? Even, you know, In Everath, it's clear there's debate in the real world, obviously, of what's, you know, who's God? Is there a God? Well, in Everath, there is a goddess named Everath who created the world. So that's crystal clear. But even with that, some of the people, some of the religions that develop aren't going to develop exactly as that goddess wants it to, because there's free will. There's people who can add their own spin. There's people who will try to use it for power, which, spoiler alert, is what happens most of the time in the real world. They try to use it to enhance themselves. So, like, there's all that at play, and I think I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, so I'll try to bring it back in.
Oh, keep going, man. Keep going.
So, like, all these different thoughts go into play, and, you know, in college, too, is where a lot of the world building happened. And so throughout the year, sophomore year especially and beyond, I just got obsessed with reading, and I mean, like, I would read thousands of hours a year I would spend, and it was a lot of philosophy and religion. And part of that was my own journey to questioning my faith growing up, and then kind of pushing that away, and then finding a new faith as an adult. I won't go into that in detail here, different time and place to discuss that. But in that journey, again, there was a lot of different perspectives. And I always tell people, and this is, I really encourage everyone, expose yourself to the perspectives, especially the ones that you know you're not going to like, especially the ones that you know. So, like, I read, I read Karl Marx, I read Das Kapital, I read the Communist Manifesto, I read Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, I read Mao's book, I read Adam Smith, you know, The Wealth of Nations. I read, again, very polarizing person. I read Ayn Rand, some of her work. I read, I just exposed to everyone. And then there's the classics, you know, Plato and Aristotle and Kant and Nietzsche. And so, there was just exposing myself. And the reason being is that I need that perspective. I need this broad perspective, because how am I going to write a real, vibrant world if I'm just coming from my narrow, like, oh, well, this is how I was raised, this is my worldview. You're not going to be able to create an actual vibrant, dynamic world. It's going to be a flat, like, propaganda world, which is what a lot of people want sometimes, but I don't. I don't want that, and I think people need to be open. And so it just all came together. And then I will say it's still ongoing. You know, it's never stopped world building. So one of the big subjects I still study a lot of is history. Just reading different history books. I still get new philosophy books on occasion too, and those help me tweak things. I will say, like, at this point, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead to another question, but at this point, there's a lot of characters. So I call my series as a whole, I think you can maybe see, the Legacy of Everath. So that's not an individual series, but that's just the universe of Everath. And the reason I do that, though, so Artemis in book one, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but I'm sorry, guys, if this upsets you. But there's going to be an Artemis. There's going to be Artemis Jr. There's going to be a third. There's going to be a fourth. And so the idea is that you get to see, over the course of my different series that take place over 1,000 years, you're going to see these different generations and how their philosophies have changed over the generations too, but how that goes on. And so there's a lot of that. So part of the ongoing world building, though, is, like, I'll admit that the series I'm writing now, I'm like, I have these characters. I need one or two more characters that actually, and these are the characters I need. I need one of the Hajj, the Dark Elf. I'm like, I need one of those in my next series. I didn't have one planned, but I need one of them to be a main character, because I think that's going to expose people to that new perspective, again, and really help enhance the world, so you get to see what their culture is developing into.
Nice. I like your approach, actually, of wanting to create a more diverse world with diverse thoughts, because you're right. I mean, I think if we write a book based on our way of thinking, it's going to reflect that in a big way. Did you have to do a lot of, like, back and forth when it came to building the world? Did you find that as you read new things, you might think, okay, this character doesn't, like, work anymore, or this people need to change? You know, did you find yourself you're kind of like rechanging your own world as you were growing more as a person?
Yes, definitely. So I'd say even last year I did some major, and I say major, so, like, the core events stayed the same. More like there's some slight tweaks, but the core events that take place were the same. But there were some serious edits I was doing. So I mentioned that I have like, I think I said 1,000 years is kind of the time frame. And the, so I have that planned out. Like I literally have more than 30 books with like, hey, this is what happens. Here's the main plot. But last year I actually did a substantial, I think, a dozen of those. I did substantial just reworking, layering in new characters, layering in new, again, just to make it more real, to flesh it out more, and recognizing that like, oh, you know, when I first thought of that story, this was great. But really, these people at this time in history, I think we need to change that. We need to adjust this here. We need to have this attitude change. This character needs to be, like I said, we need this entirely new character that I hadn't thought about. So yeah, that definitely happens quite a bit. I think we should always be open to that as authors. I'll even say as I'm writing, in this first trilogy, there's a character, Cassandra. She's a Lemia. So they're the Greek, based on Greek mythology, that's like half snake, half person up top. So she was a minor character. I mean, so I have like three layers of characters I consider. I have the main characters, then I have secondary characters, and then just random characters that I need. She was one of those secondary characters. So I had a basic bio is how I do secondary characters. Like I give them a very basic, here's their physical attributes, here's just a paragraph about this person. My main characters get a lot more detailed. But anyways, she ended up becoming a main character because she just, as I wrote her into that first book, as she started interacting with the main characters, I'm like, oh, she's gonna play a role. So she plays a bigger role in book 2 and 3 than I really anticipated. And that happened as I was writing. So.
Excellent. All right. Well, folks, we are coming down to the end of the episode. Of course, I want to thank Joseph for joining me to talk about the book series. And for all the folks who are watching, commenting, as always, we love you guys. Keep doing that. And if you want to learn more about the series and, of course, check out the books, you go to evorath.com, evorath.com. It's all there. Follow his socials, get the books, and definitely looking forward to the next books to come out, Joseph. So thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, folks, that brings this episode to a close. Of course, follow us on Instagram, follow the Facebook, Twitter. Of course, check out our other episodes, author Q&As, and a whole lot more. And I'll see y'all next time. And with that, we bring this episode to a close. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. You can catch this and all your favorite episodes on your favorite podcast platform, and new episodes are added every week, as well as on Boston Free Radio every Saturday at 10 p.m. You get at me at citywidemax@yahoo.com if you want to suggest a guest, submit your music, or just drop us a line. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.